So welcome.
Hi, welcome. Hi, welcome.
Have a seat, please.
Have a seat.
Thank you for having me again. Is this the Inquisition box?
Yeah, this is the hot seat.
Oh.
Sorry.
No trade, bro.
Okay. So hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Deep Dive. Thanks for your company. Today, as you can see, we're in a slightly different space. You may not be able to hear it on audio, but we've moved to a different part of MediaCorp. Why, Crispina? Why have we done that?
You know, we thought we would try a kind of classroom setting.
Okay, yeah.
Because we've got a special guest.
Ah, so education, classroom setting.
Yes, yes, Education Minister Mr. Chanchan Singh. Welcome.
Yeah, hello, hello. Everybody. Welcome. Hello. Welcome, Minister. So we want to talk a bit about the changes in education because last week, you know, you announced more changes to the Singapore education system in Parliament. The entry criteria to JC from 2028 onwards will change. You will take the score of 5 subjects instead of 6. So that sounds like a good thing. Like it should be less stressful.
One less subject.
Think. Yeah.
Isn't well, that
depends.
A good...
It depends.
It depends, yeah. It depends on how you look at it.
And the entry to JC will be 16 points and below. Millennia Institute stays at 20.
You went to JC, right?
Yes, I went to JC.
Did you enjoy it? What was the best part about it?
Best part about JC is making friends.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything you studied? I'm sure you did, because you are a present scholar.
Technically, yeah. I did. But I think it was in JC that I found my love for economics.
Oh, I thought you couldn't say you found your true
love. Yeah, I thought you know. Said you were going
We studied very hard. Excuse me. We were not distracted. You mean you were?
Yeah, I was totally distracted. I spent 3 years in JC. That's how much I enjoyed it.
Ah, nice. I actually wanted to go to a poly.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, but my parents would not hear of it.
So you went to a JC?
Yeah, so in the end, I went to JC. You know, in those days, you just listen to your parents, right? You don't argue with them. They say you just do it and you did it. But, you know, on hindsight, it was the best time of
my...
But why do you want to go to a JC or a poly then? What were your considerations?
See, that's the thing. Because the comms diploma had just started. I didn't know it then. You know, now we have, you know, all these counselling and stuff. Right? Yeah, I just knew... Hey, that was interesting.
I see.
Yeah, but it was stressful in JC. Like, it was fun. I still have best friends from that till today. But it was tough academically.
Yeah, I think because in the past, it was very clear. If you wanted to go to university, the pathway was, you know, finish
JC.
Your secondary school, go to JC, go to university.
In fact, it's called pre-university.
That's right.
Oh, yes, right, pre-university.
It's not called a junior college. I mean, in fact, all the A-level programs were called pre-university. Because you were supposed to prepare you for the university program.
Correct. But that's these days, many people are more inclined to go towards a poly. Or they're at that point where they go, should I go JC or poly? Their grades are good enough for either one. And both ways are just as good because very often from poly, they still go to university.
Yes, I think two things have changed. One is from the numbers perspective, I think more people are able to go from a polytechnic to a university. So I think that has changed. But the other thing that has changed is that people's perception of the JC versus the poly has changed.
Yeah.
I think in the past that you were talking about, there's a certain hierarchical ordering.
That's right.
And today, I think, you know, it's no longer such a clear-cut ordering.
That's
people who can go to the JC may choose to go to a poly, and some people might want to go the other way around as well.
Maybe you can start by telling us, you know, what motivated this change? Like what? So academic stress was a big plank of this, right? And when we were growing up, when my kids were in JC, they were quite stressed out with the load, for instance. And even before getting into JC, they were piling on the subjects so that, you know, they're hedging their bets, they're trying to get the best number they could to the best JC they could. So tell us a little bit more about the motivation behind the change.
Okay, I must say, whether it reduces stress or not, it's a separate discussion which we'll come to in a while.
Okay.
But let's take a bit... a step back into history. Why did we have this L1-R5, which is 6 subjects, compared to now the current proposal of L1-R4, which is 5 subjects?
Yeah.
Now, about 30 years ago, the number of people who passed the JC program or the pre-U program then was like 60+%. And we wanted a way to make sure that whoever goes to university, they are adequately prepared.
Yep.
And that's why having that 6 subject was deemed as a way to, if you like, ascertain whether someone is suitable for a university program.
Okay.
So it was, if you like, a bit of a selection system.
Mm.
But over time, over these 30 years, actually our passing rate for our JC program has gone on to 90+%.
Yep.
And we are pretty confident that even with one subject less, they will be ready for the university program. Because that five subjects will be able to help us discern who is suitable and who is not so suitable for the university.
Yep.
So we actually did some back testing with the data more recent years. That means you take the results of those people, you count six subjects, and you take the same students and you only count five subjects. Is it very different, the number of people who will end up in the universities or end up in the JCs? And the answer is that actually it's not very different, which means that over time, our five subjects are sufficient to help us discern who is suitable for a JC and subsequent for university program. And on the other hand, we know that in today's world, we talk about our 21st century competency, which means that we need to develop a person much more holistically than just the academic abilities. In the past, we need a more all-rounded person. So you need to spend more time trying to connect with people, communication skills, other aspects of your soft skills, life skills. All these require time, which is why on balance, we thought it's an appropriate time for us to make a move since we already have enough data points to know that who should be suitable for JC and go on to university. And on the other hand, we need more time to allow our students to explore all these other things.
Okay, so the kids are getting smarter, basically.
I mean, no, but from six to five, then why not four? So four subjects was found, not a good representation.
Not enough.
Not at this point in time, because you see, if you look at the five, actually one is language.
Yes.
And one is either math or science.
Yes.
One is in what humanities. Then you would probably need two other subjects, because when you go to the JC and then go on to a university, you need a certain basic foundation,
right? That's right.
So you can't, otherwise you will have too narrow a choice when you go to university, because I think most people at the age of 16 have not fully figured out what exactly you want to do. I mean, for me, if you ask me, let's say, we talk about the JC experience, right?
Yeah.
Before I went to JC, I know nothing about economics.
Okay.
In fact, my sister told me that better don't do economics because you need to write essays.
Right.
And we are not very good at writing essays. So I was like, oh, okay, are you sure I really like economics and not?
Yeah.
But as I went through my JC program, I realized that, okay, with a foundation in mathematics, economics, and physics, there were some options open to me. And
so options. What did you end up taking in university?
So I ended up doing economics in university.
Ah. So you got good at writing essays anyway?
I don't know whether I was good at writing essays, but I enjoyed doing the subject.
You understood the demand and supply of it. Yeah.
Okay.
Bingo.
There have been two main reactions based on what we've seen. Some are saying, okay, are you making it easier for people to get into JC?
Right.
That's one. But on the other hand, there are also people who are saying, no, it's going to be even more competitive. You know, they are trying to game it and say, each subject, the average, you need to get this, etc. What is your reading of that?
Actually, it is entirely expected. So first thing, we did the back testing, right? We look at the scores of those who went to the JC, whether we have counted five or six subjects, they are roughly about the same.
Right.
So we are not tightening or loosening the criteria in any way. The outcomes are about the same.
Okay.
Then we have also heard of this feedback. These people who gave the feedback that say that, you might actually be more stressful.
Yeah.
And that was why I narrated the story when in Parliament. This is a true story. I went to a JC and I asked them, because they started with this thing, Minister, life is very stressful. So I said, what can I do to help you? And I said, how about I slash the content by 50%? So you just need to do the same subjects, but everything by only 50%. They looked at me. They were stunned. They thought this minister might not be so sound.
Okay.
Then it took a long time. They thought about it. And they all replied in unison and said, no, minister, don't do that. I said, why not? You got less thing to study, you got more time, right? Then they say, no. You know, our mindset is that we will compete until the third decimal point if we have less thing to study.
Okay. Oh my God.
Rather than competing until the first or second decimal point.
Don't tell us which school this is.
So I'm not telling you which school this is. But it is quite a common phenomenon and mindset, right?
I blame is the home environment too, because these are the parents when the kids are young. During the school holidays, they will say, how come no homework? And they asked the principal, how come there's no holiday homework?
So I don't know whether these are the same group of students. So I jokingly told them, and then they fell off the chair. I said, if I cut your syllabus by half, you're going to increase the stress. Then should I increase your syllabus? They all look at me. Now this time they were rolling on. They were laughing and rolling on the ground.
Okay.
But then actually there was a more serious problem.
Yeah.
And this is the nub of the issue. And I was a bit sad. So I asked them, I said, if I really cut your syllabus by half and you really freed up some time, and then you all change your mindset and say that you're not going to compete until the third decimal point, but maybe just be where you are. what will you do with your free time?
Yeah.
And that was the part where I was the saddest. Because they took a long time. They looked at me. They looked at each other.
And what did they say?
They took a long time before they gave me any answer.
Right.
So I was like, oh, isn't there something that you wanted to learn? And this reminds me of my time in university. Mm-hmm. Yeah? I had a choice. Do I just study whatever is in the curriculum, regardless of what it is, whether I'm interested or not,
yep,
so long as it's coming out for my exam? Or do I go and spend some time doing things which I really like to learn,
yep,
but may not come out in my exam? So a real example, I did economics, right? So when I was in university, I have to learn Marxian economics.
Wow, okay.
I'm sure you all don't know what's Marxian economics.
We don't.
But at a point in time, behavioral science, game theory were like what they call voodoo economics, because it, right, was not the mainstream economics.
Okay.
I wanted to learn all these things. And my professor told me, are you sure? Chan, are you sure you want to do,
yeah,
this? Because it's not going to come out for the exam. Then you have two possible reactions, right? Oh, it's not coming out for the exam. Don't waste my time.
Right.
Or you can take my type of reaction. Oh, very good. Thank you very much. It's not coming out for my exam. So I can do whatever I want and I don't have to worry about my exam, right?
That's right.
And I just learn more things in
learn
other
it for the joy of learning it.
Rather than just preparing for an exam. So, you know, coming back to Crispina's point earlier about whether will this reduce stress or not, actually it's not so much just the system whether it reduces stress or not. It's also our own response,
yeah,
our own mindsets,
okay,
to it.
But it is both sides.
Yeah, yeah, it
and
is
that's
kind
the challenge
of,
now, right?
Yeah,
because parents are not so chill.
No.
They will be the, oh, not counted, then don't waste your time doing it.
Yeah.
Could be. Right? But this is where I really hope that we go beyond this thing about just studying for exams and getting a grade. I mean, in some sense, it is important, but more important than that, you must have the joy of learning, right?
Yeah.
To say that, I want to learn, I want to keep learning, whether is it in the exam necessarily or not, right? But this is where I want to tell all our students that, you know, every one of us has something special in us. And the education system is to help us understand our own strengths and weaknesses. And if every one of us can develop our own strengths according to what we are gifted in, then I think we have a diversity of skill sets and attributes that makes for collective resilience. Because I don't know what's the next crisis that Singapore may face.
Correct.
But if we are all very good only in certain areas and not in other areas, it makes for what I call we are strong but brittle. Strong in the areas that we do,
correct,
but brittle as a system. And I really hope that Singapore, we have that diversity of strength so that in future, whatever crisis that we may come across, we have the diversity of talents and strengths to help us overcome this together as a nation.
And those lessons actually come from making mistakes, trying something, failing, and picking up your feet and doing it again, you know.
Yes.
But right now, there is that fear of that. We are so ingrained in our system where academics are such an important criteria of our lives that nothing else really matters. So it's a bit of both, because some will say if the system doesn't relax in that sense, then I cannot relax as a parent too.
But there's also another part. I think we shouldn't just say that the parents are like that. I think the parents are also responding to what I call the market sickness.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if we are true to ourselves, then our whole society must come together and embrace that diversity of talent. That a very simple test. I always ask my students when they go for the first job interview, right? I ask them, what did your potential employers ask you? If the potential employers only ask you about, hey, what's your PSLE score, what's your O-level score, then you can't blame the students and the parents for saying that this seems like your only yardstick. But if the potential employers can also play their part and say that, okay, I want to know, what else have you done besides what you have been taught in school? You know, one of my favorite questions when I challenge the students when I go to school is that, tell me something that you have learned on your own that it's not inside the curriculum. Your mother didn't send you for tuition your parents, your mother or your father didn't send you for tuition classes, but you just wanted to learn it on your own. And to me, if I see something like that as an employer, it tells me something about the individual beyond the grades.
That's
right. You know, you want to know whether that person has a zest to learn. You want to know whether that person, if he or she is determined to learn something, he or she will put his or her mind onto it and make time for it.
Yeah.
So it's not about, I only learn this if I have time.
Yeah.
But because I want to learn this, I will make time to learn
this. Mine was play marbles.
It's okay. Even playing marble is a discipline, right?
Yeah.
You want to play marble well, you must
make
time to play marbles well.
You speak to quite a lot of young parents who have kids in the system. In fact, I was just speaking to a mom. So she says, okay, I don't want to stress my kid and we'll see how it goes. And then her weighted assessment comes back. She's in P4 and she fails her Chinese. And then she goes into a panic mode, right? I would go into a panic mode. I'm sure you would, like if your kid came back and like didn't do so well with something. So The reality of it is that we do have an idea that, okay, our kids need to do well enough so that they can move on, have good jobs, maybe even be a scholar or a minister. You know, that's the paradigm. Yeah,
but what is well enough?
Yeah, what is it? I think well enough, if the kid has tried his or her best, I think that's, for us, is good enough, right? And well enough, right? But I think our fear is that we keep making our children live in someone else's image.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, seriously. Right. Sometimes we are all parents. Sometimes we are caught in this thing, right? Why is my kid not measuring up to someone else? But I know, you know, this is always a very dangerous conversation, because what the message we are sending to our children is, you're not really interested in who I am, what I can do.
Right.
You are more interested in whether I'm keeping up with somebody else. And in this way of developing our children, we might inevitably make them lose their self-confidence.
That's right.
And that's something that I know it's not easy to do. It's precisely so difficult. Yeah. That's why we as parents, we must keep constantly reminding ourselves that when we keep comparing our children with someone else, we need to understand our children. Some children respond well and say that they are the fighters. No? Yeah. They say that, oh, I'm not measuring up, I will try harder. But some children may just get totally demoralized and say that, why you keep comparing myself? And some people develop at different speed, at different stages in life. And who is there to
and
say
they could
that?
Excel in other ways, which are non-academic. I mean, like, I was academically challenged. I went a normal stream. I stayed back in JC my first year, you know. I didn't do well in our local system at all.
No, a real story. The other day, I visited a secondary school, a girls' school. at the side of my eye, I saw a lady waiting around, seemingly wanting to speak to me. Before I left, the principal said, oh, she wanted to meet you. I said, oh, who is she? Mm. He said, oh, she's a parent of an ex-student. I said, oh, goodness me.
Ex-student.
Ex-student.
Yeah, okay.
And she came up to me and she says, I want to thank you and the education system. I said, oh, no, why do you thank me? And she told us a very inspiring story. She said, I waited to tell you this. My daughter was the first one to went through the normal stream. So when she started on the normal stream, everybody was telling her that you're just wasting your time. You see, you're going to take 4 years, you're taking 5 years.
First one in her family, she means.
First like batch.
Oh, first batch.
Which means many years ago.
When the streaming system started.
Yeah,
okay.
Started many years ago. So then she went on, I think maybe polytechnics or whatever universities. Then she went on and continued studying at her own pace.
Mm.
And guess where she is today? She has a PhD.
Okay.
Working in a research lab in the US.
Yeah.
Then I was like, wow. But then she reflected. She says that actually at that point in time, she felt quite malu, quite, you know,
embarrassed.
Yeah. Disappointed, etc.
Disappointed. Why my child.
You're embarrassed for your family because.
Yeah. Why need
but
5 years?
You see, that's the thing. That can't be scrubbed out even today.
Yes. But
I hear
now,
parents
when you
saying
hear
the same thing.
Her story. Then she reflected. She says, actually, it was a blessing that we didn't force her kid to go through the 4 year. Because if her kid has gone through the 4 year pace, maybe she would have flunked out, or maybe she would not have.
Wouldn't have been able to keep up.
And then she would have lost all interest in that.
Right.
But because she took a longer route to where
she went
to poly even.
Yeah.
She even went to poly. But, you know, in life, she finally more than caught up at her own time.
But it was that label, going to normal stream, and the people, the way people looked at you, talked about you, you know. So I think I'm glad to know that you know,
it's
has been phased
changing.
Out, you know.
It takes time for us to change our mindsets. And this is why it's something close to my heart. You see, I always don't like the fact that we keep comparing our children with one another and perhaps in the process make many of them feel inadequate.
Mm.
And I just want every child in Singapore to know that regardless of how fast or how slow you develop, there's a path for you.
Mm.
When we talk about multiple pathways of success, we really mean it that regardless of the different paths that you are, there are different ways of achieving different forms of success according to your own gifts. And that's why I say what I say in Parliament. I just blurted this out because I thought, actually, perhaps a more appropriate motto, if you like, is every child, a good school. Every age, a good learner. Because if we can tell our children, for every child, a good school, I'm not comparing you with somebody else. I'm just understanding your own learning needs, and I put you into the correct environment that best support you, rather than trying to make you compete with somebody else.
But I mean, in Parliament, you also said you were under no illusion this is going to be easy, right?
No.
To change.
Yeah. No, because
how long do you think, if you were betting, like how long would you?
Well, I think this is a work that's is constantly in progress. In the larger scheme of things, structures, organisations, policies are relatively easier to change.
Yes.
Mindset is the one, and perspectives are the ones that take a bit of a longer time to evolve. But you can't do one without the other. And you can't wait for one
to change before doing the other.
Yeah. Then you'll be a bit of a chicken and egg problem, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to keep nudging on both sides to make sure that we move towards the destination that we want.
So there's a trend of secondary school students who are eligible for JC, but choose poly at the joint admission exercise. 10 years ago, there were 40% of the cohort. In 2024, that had gone up to 49%. Nian actually has said that 65% of his students who are enrolled could go to JC. Does this mean that a JC education is slowly becoming irrelevant?
The change comes about because more and more people are also realizing that actually the JCs and the polys have quite different methods of learning and teaching. And different students with different abilities and aptitudes, they take to the different pedagogies, if you like, differently.
Right.
So it's not just whether you score well or not score well in your O-level.
That's right.
That makes you suitable or not suitable for a JC or a poly program. Mm. Some people score very well for the O-level.
O-levels.
And they go to the JC, they find that they are not so suitable because the JC pedagogy is quite different from the O-level pedagogy. In the JC, I think for those of us who've been through it, you have gaps in between different periods. You're expected to do more self-study and so on and so forth. Then when it comes to poly, it's also a slightly different pedagogy because they do problem-based solving, they look at projects, and you are also less structured in the way you go and solve a problem and you work with different people in different with different backgrounds. So I think there are just different ways that people adapt to their learning
so
and teaching systems.
So you're saying the score is not the criterion for choosing, right? You're saying it depends on the child.
Suitability.
I think the score gives you a certain sense of your own ability.
Right.
But more important than your level of ability, you need to know your learning style. What kind of learning style best suits you?
Yep.
That's why we have people who went to the JC and realized that, hey, actually this is not exactly the cup of tea. And then they went to a poly and they do well. On the other hand, I also have people who went to the poly and realized
and then switch back,
and switch to the JC because they realized that, maybe they need a much more structured environment. So I think the assurance we give to fellow Singaporeans is that it's important for you not to compare yourself with others and not to go and go after where all your friends go. It's more important for you to understand your own strengths and weaknesses and your own aptitudes. And then you choose whether you JC or poly or IT, which one fits your character, your aptitude better.
Yeah. It's funny because my second one, I was quite convinced he would be better in poly. And I was trying to convince him to go to poly. And he was like, no, I'm going to JC.
Possible.
And so later, now I asked him, what do you think? Did you think you made the right choice? And he said, yeah, because it's more structured. It suited me. He's quite naughty lah. So he feels that the poly would have been, a bit more difficult to cope.
Yes.
So where's the structuredness of the JC? So that's why it's interesting, right? It really depends. Things have changed.
Yeah. But the whole idea is to give the option.
Yes, to give people the option so that we don't have this old mindset that is hierarchical in one way.
Yeah.
One is inferior to the other, right?
Talking Point did this. I'm not sure if you saw this, Minister, but they had a look at tuition industry. And there was this poor kid, right? Who had like 3 or 4 tuition, one in the north, one in the west. And I felt quite
I followed
sad.
A girl once for her during her PSLE year. Her days were crazy. She had sometimes 2 or 3 tuitions in the same day, like back to back, 7 to 8 p.m., then 9 to 10 p.m. I was like, wow.
So I always feel that as a parent, I don't want that.
Yeah.
I mean, if I could, I would save money and not be stressed and not have the kid be stressed. But sometimes when you look at the results and it's dismal and you're thinking, oh my God, I have to do something. So it's this, what's a reasonable approach to this, you think?
So I usually start off with a very simple question when I discuss this topic with the children in the schools. I ask a very simple question. Did you want to go for tuition or did someone send you there? Now, that's a very fundamental difference in this, you know.
Okay.
How many kids say, I want to go?
Yeah.
Oh, no, there are.
Oh, really?
There are. There are.
Wow.
There are.
Okay.
No, because there are kids who aspire. Okay, whether they are comparing themselves with others or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But it starts from a...
So there's a self-motivation.
Self-motivation.
Yeah.
So to me, this one is quite different from the one who says that, actually, I really don't want to go, but somebody sent me there.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's quite different. So, you know, I think most Singaporeans, they like to excel. That's not a bad thing. So it's not a bad thing. They want to do better. And some of them, it's not just about the score. Some of them genuinely want to learn something more. Right?
Yeah.
So I think that's all right. But the crux of it is that when we do all this, beyond trying to get a better score, I think the more important question we need to ask ourselves as individuals and as parents and as educators is that, are we really creating the innate desire to learn on our own? Or are we just, you know, trying to shoehorn somebody into a certain mold? And in the process, you can score very well for PSLE, O-levels and whatnot, but you have no...
Yeah,
joy of learning, no zest.
No joy in life.
Okay,
but this joy of tuition the whole day.
This joy of learning, I feel, is now a luxury in Singapore.
Yeah.
So for many of these kids, they feel that the moment they start primary school, they're hearing about PSLE.
Yeah.
You know, so everyone around them is saying, oh, PSLE this year. Yeah, people say, well, PSLE this year, you're stressed out. I'm like, why am I stressed? I'm not taking the exam, right?
But you see, you know, just how Crispina, you used the point, you say the results are dismal. But actually, we also have to watch what we say to the kids, you see.
Okay.
When we say dismal, what do we mean?
Fail, right? Minister.
No, fail. Some of them may not. Okay, the fail one, you go and get extra help and whatnot.
Yeah.
That one, okay, we can understand. During our time, the people who fail also go for tuition.
Yeah.
But today, even the people who don't fail go for tuition.
Those who are doing really well, they want to get the best.
A wants to go to A plus.
So this is where it goes back to just now where we started the conversation, right? Actually, when we say we didn't do well or the kid didn't do well, what do we mean? Did they not do well, A, relative to their own potential?
Right.
Or B, relative to someone else's performance? Or C, relative to our own expectations, regardless of the first two.
Mm.
So it all depends on what's our starting point. For parents to want to help their children, it's not a sin, it's not a crime. I mean, it's natural for parents to want to help their children to do better, right? But one of the things that I always watch for whenever the children run around for all these extra classes, is this something that the kids want? Is this something that, of course, the parents and the kids don't know what they want, right? Is this something that brings... the sparkle in the eyes of the
for
the
Chinese tuition.
I don't know, man. I don't think so. I think that spark is gone.
That spark is hard.
Okay, so it's just like learning mother tongue languages,
that's
right?
The hardest.
You look at the child, even if they score A1, do they continue to use the language beyond the school? And that's really what we hope. I have many friends who didn't score A1 and A2 or whatever in their O and A levels Chinese, right? But today, they use it in a proficient way. They continue to improve.
Right.
On the other hand, I also have friends who squeeze out the A1 in the whatever exam. And today, they are absolutely monolingual.
Yeah.
Refuse to speak
In fact, sometimes they may look upon the language with disdain, right?
Yeah.
And then I think we have failed in a larger...
They were just doing it for the exam.
Obviously, they were just doing it for the school.
So, you know, today we lead... I mean, our lives are... so much longer than in the past. And it's not just what we do in the first 15 years, right? It is more important what we continue to do in the next 50 years.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a bit like the, you know, last time we all learned this parable about the rabbit and the tortoise.
Right? Both racing, yeah.
Some people might start off a bit slower, but with persistence, they will overtake other people.
Yeah. So a lot of it is expected. I remember this one time when I was young and I was, maybe it's just me, I didn't do well in class. Out of like 35 kids, I was like 30 out of 35. And then my mom would come and tell me, why are you so low in the class? You should try and do better. But I said, look, the guy who's 5 out of 35 and me 30 out of 35, next year, same class. So I said, what for?
Once upon a time in the military, you know, I topped the course.
Yeah.
And I was given a C grade.
Oh.
Yeah. Even though you topped the course.
I topped the course. Yeah. So I went to my instructor then and said,
why?
What did I do wrong?
Yeah. Right?
Then he gave me the, wow, you should be very proud. You are the first student to top the course in recent memory and got C grade. Then I was like, huh? Then I was like, huh? Then what did the rest get? At that era,
yeah,
it was like, C is good.
Oh.
Yeah.
C is good, right? Met requirements, ma.
Yes.
Okay, okay.
C is met requirements.
Then you should be very proud. I said, okay. Then I went overseas. And this time, I went overseas. My first essay, I scored 93.
Okay.
Of 100, no. In Singapore, we never cross 70.
Yeah.
Yeah. I scored 93. I was like, over the moon. This is A++ in Singapore's lexicon, right? So I was so happy. Then I did the very Singaporean thing.
Yeah, how do you do?
I went to check my friend. Right? How do you do? Then another international student, whose first language is not English, scored 98.
Wow.
Then I was like, okay. You know, totally deflated. And then, and this time again, I went to my instructor and like, you know, how can I improve? Yeah. Or no, what did I draw? Then he looked at me. It's okay, Chan. It's okay. You're all right. You're all right. And I said, but you know, surely not so all right. I said, oh no, it's okay. Because he doesn't speak English as a first language. So there's a bit of a handicap system. So,
you know.
Said, but you are one of the few that pass and ace your English exam. So we just keep you by whatever standards.
Yeah.
But it's a very interesting thought experiment. I asked my kids and the children I interacted. Yeah. I said, would you be in the first scenario where you top student but got a C grade? Or would you prefer to be the second scenario whereby you got an A++ grade, but you are not the top student by far? What's your answer? Even if I make you answer me now, what's your preference? The first one or the second one?
First one. I'm happy with the C, top of my class, because I've never been top of anything.
In the kingdom of blind.
I would pick the second.
You'll be the second.
I won't even compare results, because... Why? Ignorance is bliss. I'm very happy. I did well already. Before I find out how much the other guy got.
Okay, Christina.
I'm the kind of one who goes for the tuition to get the 98. Okay, that's
okay. Why. So you see, actually, it's a very interesting thought experiment, right? Are we happy with what we achieve?
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. Or are we happy with what we achieve only relatively?
Exactly. Relational to somebody else.
And in Singapore, you see, our standards are so high. Our averages are very high. You see, when at the PISA score, when 80% of our people are above the global average, right? 80% of our people are above the global average. We shouldn't feel miserable, right? But why are we feeling miserable? Because we keep comparing about internal relativities.
Yeah.
Actually, at the end of the day, it's how Team Singapore perform as a team to out-compete other people rather than how we internally compete amongst ourselves, right?
Yeah. But you know, when your kid comes back with a test result, the first thing you always ask is, what was the top score or what was the best?
How did the other kids do,
right? Yeah, how did the other kids do? So these guys would always say, the good news is I'm not last.
But that's also a very important learning point for us as parents, right? Because if you look at the results, there's a few things that you can ask, right? You can ask, like, hey, what do your friends get?
Yeah, that's exactly
question number one. Or you can ask something else, right? That's or can be the old generation of parents. You got 97. Why you lose 3 marks?
Yes.
Like, hey,
the cup is always half empty.
Half empty or half full, right?
Can't win.
Okay. Or you can ask the child, like, are you happy with what you obtained?
See,
do you think that you can...
are you happy?
Are you happy with what you have? And do you think you can improve? Now, this is more internal...
That's right.
Self-reflection rather than a relative comparison with somebody else, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes actually our language also shapes
how
absolutely.
So I think that's why my parents struggled, because I was always so happy with whatever I got, even though it was really bad. You know, they didn't know what to do. They were like, how do I get this guy to work harder? Because I was so easily satisfied.
But it's okay, in life you're more than caught up.
Yeah, in other ways. So, I mean, so there is something for everyone. And I think that is important here. We need to understand that not everyone fits this mold, may not need to go through the system this way. They will flourish in other ways.
Which is why for every child, a good school. A good school according to your needs, not a good school because someone else say is a good school or is the most sought after school. Because that may not be the suitable environment for you.
Okay, can you see the day when our minister, our prime minister is a non-graduate? Hasn't gone to university?
No. I would say that whether you can be a prime minister, minister, depends not so much whether you go to university, whether you got a degree, got a PhD and whatnot. Yeah. The most important thing is, do you have a heart for the people?
Soft skills.
Are you honest? Do you have the integrity? Or are you there just for yourself because, you know, you want to win the argument, you want the power for yourself? That's the most scary type of ministers and prime minister. You are there because it's all about you and yourself. And people will see through that. But
that's right.
On the other hand, if you are there for the people, you're there for the country, and you put the country and the people before yourself, I think people will also see it. And people, after a while, will know and see beyond you whether you degree or not degree,
right?
Diploma or not diploma. If you look at the situation now, we have about 40% of our people going to university at the age of about 18 to 20. And we hope that in time to come, we have a core participation rate of 60%, which means that throughout one's life, there's a 60% chance that we will be in the university, right? That's what we call cohort participation rate. So right. It's entirely possible. So there's no one fixed point, right? In future, when we talk about whether you have a degree or not, no, people are not going to ask whether you have it at 18 years old or you had it at 30 years old.
Right.
But we want to give every Singaporean the confidence that regardless of your talents and gifts, there's a path for you.
Mm.
And it is not a one-size-fits-all. It is not a one-test-determines-all. It is about continuous meritocracy. You just keep trying. And then even if you are, you started off a bit slower, you started off not as privileged as some other people, you will always have a chance and a place in Singapore.
So it will be regardless of race, language and educational
degree.
Qualifications.
Starting point.
Yeah.
It's a joke going around that, well, if you come from the Singapore education system, I kind of take your standards as roughly there. But I want to know, what are your other soft skills, life skills, future skills, and whether you have a zest to learn, you have a knack for bringing people together and solve problems from different perspectives.
Okay.
Right.
We're done.
We're done. Class is over.
Class dismissed.
Thanks so much for listening in. This has been Deep Dive. If you have any comments, thoughts to share with us, do jump online. A shout out to the team, Junaini Johari, Tiffany Ang, Saya Win, Joanne Chan, and Hanida Amin.
Thank you.
See you soon.
See you soon. Bye.